I'm Al Filreis, and this is Poem Talk at the Writer's House, where I have the pleasure of convening three friends in the world of contemporary poetry and poetics to collaborate on a close but not too close reading of a poem. We'll talk, maybe even disagree a bit, and perhaps open up the verse to a few new possibilities, and we hope gain for a poem that interests us some new readers and listeners. And I say listeners because Poem Talk poems are available in recordings made by the poets themselves as part of our Penn Sound archive, writing.upenn.edu/pennsound. Today I'm joined here in Philadelphia in the Arts Cafe of the Kelly Writer's House by Randall Couch, a Poem Talk original, poet, editor, university administrator, teacher of writing and poetics at Arcadia University, editor and translator of the poems of Gabriela Mistral, published by Chicago in April 08. And by Lynn Din, whom we welcome back to Poem Talk after many months away, Saigon-born Philadelphian, whose most recent book of poems is Jam Alerts, and whose blog called Detainees I read every single day. And by Emily Abendroth, a writer and artist currently residing in Philly, where she co-curates the Moles Not Molar reading series, whose chapbook Toward Edward Forward is being published by Horseless Press, and who received a grant to work on an ongoing essay project, You Are Your Own Worst Enemy, The Use of Self-Abuse as a Mask to Institutional Culpability at Eastern State Penitentiary and Guantanamo Bay. Welcome, all three of you. Randall, hi, welcome back.
Hey, Al.
Emily, it's great to have you here at the Writer's House and on Poem Talk for the first time. And Lynn, we've missed you. It's good to see you. Welcome back to Poem Talk. Please don't leave Philly for such a long time again. Promise?
Promise.
Okay. Our poem today is Rodrigo Toscano's Poetics. It was first published in the Mills College-based annual 580 Split. That's the title of the annual. And read aloud at a post-9/11 reading at SUNY Buffalo on November 14, 2001. And published in Toscano's magnificent book Platform, published by Attilos in 2003. So let's now listen to the November 2001 reading of Rodrigo Toscano reading Poetics.
Poetics. Pyongyang, if you'll please stop appearing in the poem like this, unannounced. In writing to your Pomomomo, that special critical topos between an ideologue father and a parajuridical mother, this side of the Hudson, psychoacoustics, jangling, claim you what? We call it dead in the wawa. Don't mean Jackie bits, Pyongyang. But it does, as an in-walk bud flips the whole session on its head. Lexicals in range, clash and dash out. Patch 14ths off the scale to perfect fifths, effects, react rather more differently than before with Pyongyang in there. And Quetzalcoatl lands on tarragon, jangling it? If that's where the nitro's stored, in tarragon, birds already been blown off, feathers falling, fields been recharged. And Thatcher, as guest jaw harp soloist, the EU's formative contradictions, unresolved. Some killing that cut. You got the mic, Pomomomo. Make a hole yourself. And Maggie. And us.
So why do you think, any of you, why do you think Pyongyang keeps reappearing in the poem? Why is it like a bad penny turning up all the time? Why would that be, Randall?
Well, one of the things that strikes me about this poem is his, given the interest in his other work, is the concentration here on a kind of Eurocentric dominance in the middle of the poem. And I keep seeing Pyongyang as the intrusion of the non-European world into this psychoacoustic jam session here with the...
Is there also an ideological intrusion, symbolically at least, in there? I mean, Pyongyang is where? What
North
country?
Korea.
North Korea.
Yeah,
so it really does sound like the return of the of the, you know, has been Stalinism or something, that Rodrigo Toscano is, he's not so sure it's such an awful thing that it keeps coming back. Emily, what do you think? Why is North Korea coming back?
Well, I think for me, one of the things that his work is always trying to do, and one of the things that he'll say, is sort of this idea of seating people together at the table who are not necessarily seated there generally, and to take it into different registers and regions that don't coincide well or easily or without friction.
Yeah, I mean, in actuality, North Korea is treated as a kind of a pest, you know, as a recurring kind of annoying, you can't get rid of them sort of minor threat, you know, trumped up kind of threat that just keeps appearing in the news sporadically.
And in 2001, I'm not sure how before 9/11 he wrote the poem, but he read it right afterwards. Certainly the air must have been charged at Buffalo when he began a poem by talking about the constant threat of coming into a poem, at least a poem by him, of Pyongyang, because it was talked about as one of those rogue states that's likely to do bad things to the United States. Axis of evil.
Although Thatcher is equally charged, although in different ways. Like, I mean, the way in which she enters in quotations on that name is like a different thicket of sounds and a totally different set of carrying baggage that comes.
Well, one of the things
that
strikes me about this, I think that's wonderful, because one of the things that strikes me about it is that North Korea also represents the closed society that resists the imperialism of the Pomo Momo. And of Thatcher, et cetera. So there's a sense in which it works both ways, I think.
So tell me what, you know, give me the simple definition of pomomomo. Does it have something to do with postmodernism?
I would think so.
Is poetry, pomo, postmodernism.
And he's
pomomomo is playing on mama.
Exactly. And he, when he gives his little a positive definition within parentheses here, that special critical topos between an ideoloaf father and a paragiuridical mother, he's personifying this thing using what he loves to do, which is to put together words that don't actually quite make a new word. So like ideoloaf is not a real word in French or English. It's like ideologue and philosophe stuck together. And paragiuridical, you know, so you've got the kind of French theory and the Anglo-American analytic philosophical tradition invoked here by these kind of nonsensical constructions, which I think is just wonderful.
In writing to your pomomomo, that special critical topos between an ideologue father and a paragiuridical mother, this side of the Hudson, psychoacoustics, jangling, claim you what? We call it dead in the Wawa. Don't mean Jackie Bits. Pyongyang.
Frankly, I was stumped by pomomomo. I didn't know what it was saying. Did you, Emily? Did you figure it out? I had no idea what it was saying.
Not in a way that I would like, but I've also
well,
sort
we
of
do
some
have
of
the father
registers
and the mother
like
there,
postmodern
right.
and mom. Yeah, same,
in writing to your pomomomo, so that's your mother. If you're writing to your mother, you're sending a message mm-hmm. back to the some kind of intimate space, but pomomomo is also the mode.
Mm-hmm. And pomomomo right. takes over the mic mode. At the end of the jam session after this wonderful Thelonious Monk riff here, In Walks Bud.
In Walks Bud is Thelonious Bud. Monk.
Yeah.
In Walked
mm-hmm.
Bud. Yeah, and why the reference to that?
Well, I love this idea that Emily said about clashing registers, and Monk was so, his harmonies were so famously dissonant, the 14ths. Mm-hmm. And things like that suggest the kind of possibilities that you get when you throw in the North Korean and the Latin American notes into this jam session here. Mm-hmm. And sort of they complicate the Eurocentric pomomomo.
But it does. As an in-walk bud flips the whole session on its head. Lexicals in range, clash, and dash out. Patch 14ths off the scale to perfect fifths, effects, react rather more differently than before with Pyongyang in there.
Let me throw a question out. Is the primary pleasure of this poem a kind of a sonic pleasure, a kind of just a textual pleasure, rather than because it's hard to pin down exactly what the politics of it is, right? What the meaning of it is, because frankly, the average reader would be kind of
I don't know that it's so hard to pin down the politics. It seems to me that the key pleasure is the jangling. You're right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The jangling of different registers, the jangling of different musical idioms. Pyongyang is one. I'm not going to pronounce it.
Quetzalcoatl.
That's a Mesoamerican sound.
Mm-hmm.
And Rodrigo Toscano is very interested in that. And then you have the EU sound, Thatcher. And so he's interested in the jangling. And when I hear the word jangling, I think of, you know, a great purveyor of, I'm always thinking of Wallace Stevens. The Man with the Blue Guitar is the argument, it's a left-right argument, the argument between the guitarist and his detractors. And it's said that there's a jangling between them, and of course it's the jangling that makes the music. However, this is not some post-ideological statement where he says, isn't it great how the different registers of our different ideologies geopolitically jangle and therefore make music?
Yeah, I see.
Mm-hmm. That's totally the problem of the poem.
Right. I totally agree with Emily's position, although I don't see the speaker of the poem as identifying with the Pomomomo. I think I hear the speaker of the poem as precisely saying that the plumed serpent and all that represents and the sounds from these different cultures can, in fact, be seated at the table, and perhaps the Pomomomo is the thing that's in the way of that.
I mean, my take on this historically is Rodrigo Toscano is a leftist in a post-communist era, and he's not uncomfortable with that, but we're supposed to be uncomfortable with it. So Maggie Thatcher said there is no such thing as society once in her period, in her time. And what she meant was the social good, the whole rhetoric of the social good is bankrupt. What we now have are individuals. So government's only role is to get out of the way or do just enough to allow the individual to perform in such a way that the social good comes through the back door. And I think in a post-communist world, you have a poet who's committed to the social good but knows that when you start arguing for it, such as the recent election, where any reference to the social good immediately becomes tarred as communist and socialist. And in the post-communist world, you have the old argument between the EU, which is structured as serving the individual good, and the national good will come from that. Pyongyang stands for the already highly charged, disliked answer to that.
Pyongyang, if you'll please stop appearing in the poem like this, unannounced. In writing to your Pomomomo, that special critical topos between an ideologue father and a parajuridical mother, this side of the Hudson, psychoacoustics, jangling.
I'm still completely intrigued by the extent to which he, as the speaker, identifies with the postmodernist European theoretical project. Is he inside or outside that, or does it matter?
It does matter because of the form of the poem. Is the form of the poem quoted from everywhere? The subject position is wandering. It's collagey. I mean, it's soundy. It's a postmodern poem. And he worries about what the politics of that are in the era, post-communist era of EU and Thatcherism.
Well, you've raised a really interesting question, which is, are all poems that employ the techniques that you've mentioned containable in the construct he's doing here of Pomomomo with his two invented theoretical characteristics? I would argue no. I would argue that just because it's written now and because it invokes techniques, that it's not necessarily included in that construct.
Well, the title of the poem is Poetics. That seems to me to suggest something, at least metapoetical, like he's got something to say about poetics, about this whole problem. Lynn, Emily, why do you think he calls it Poetics?
Well, okay. I'm going to be kind of contrarian and throw
well,
this
that's,
out.
That's why, okay. That's why we missed you all these months.
Because this poem, I think, is meant for the poetry community. You know what I'm saying? Is for a certain sophisticated audience. It's not meant for your average reader. And it's interesting that Rodrigo is a union organizer. He has very direct experience with common people. But yet his poetry is meant for a very specific audience. And there's something I would say that is decadent about this poem, you know, because it's exclusive and it's elitist, you know. In a sense, the evolution of poetry into this kind of strategy is inevitable. I mean, in a sense, it's liberating in a way because it provides like an alternative to a certain kind of dogmatic and didactic poetry. But on the other hand, it could be off-putting. Is what I'm trying to say.
Well, I think I don't agree at certain foundational levels, just because
with
of
what
the
Lynn
pool
just said.
He draws from, yeah, with some only of what you just said, just in terms of like janky bits and dead in the wawa and that the pools from which some of the spaces he's drawing from wouldn't be the most traditional sort of elitist academic realm, and so it does seem like he is constantly creating that jangle interface, and there's some way in which I do think he is always implicated in his own poems from a point of critique, and so that move of like the sliding pronoun, like the and Maggie and you and I, seems like something he does all the time, like this line and another where it's like, it's your fault we don't live in radical times, it's my fault we don't live in radical times,
and it's Maggie's fault, of course. Mm-hmm. We start with that,
and you, I don't know if the analysis happens there, but it leaves a space after the piece in which analysis can occur.
Well, I agree with Emily and I disagree with Lynn. But I think Lynn, it would be true if the content of the poem were what we had. The book is called Platform, the poem is called Poetics. It's a very programmatic situation for him. He is willing to be ideological and didactic, dogmatic. But he does it through a poem that is very jazzy, very soundy. And, you know, the this side of the Hudson psychoacoustics are, you know, based on the pronunciation of father and mother, and he does that so beautifully. I actually think, on the contrary, that this is a poem, this is a complicated poem that listeners of all kinds, you know, sophomores in high school, would listen to, almost in a Miri Baraka sense of, I don't know what he said, but there's something that makes me listen to it. And he's talking about politics, international politics. I don't know what all the references are, but I think I know what his position is through the sound. Lynn, does that make any sense? I mean
yeah, I hear what you're saying. And you know, as someone who's involved with poetry, I mean, I can derive pleasures from this. You know, the hipness of this, just like I said, the sonic quality of this is pleasurable to me. But I'm at this point in time, I'm wondering whether this strategy is a little exhausted.
And Quetzalcoatl lands on tarragon, jangling it. If that's where the nitro's stored in tarragon, birds already been blown off, feathers falling, fields been recharged.
Quetzalcoatl being the sort of national emblem of Mesoamerica, Mexico in particular, it seems to me there's a lot of potential clash of culture, colonial, post-colonial energy being brought into this discussion here too. I don't think it's just the European question of communism versus Adam Smith. I think this is a lot about a global set of relationships that may not fit into that dynamic, which is where I see the Pomomomo is the trying to hog the stage here, and I think he may be questioning that.
These are blunt ideological terms, yeah. But the music is subtle. 14ths, In Walked Bud, but which, by the way, is a, of course, it's a monk piece, but Miri Baraka made a pretty well-known poem, In Walked Bud, mm-hmm. out of it, in which he scats and jazzes, and that, by the way, is in the Penn Sound archive, I believe.
Excellent.
Well, before we get to the Gathering Paradise segment of our show, let me ask each of you to offer a brief final word on this poem, or maybe something more on what you get from it. Who wants to go first? Lynn, thoughts?
Sure. Yeah, maybe I'm talking like this today because I've been increasingly frustrated by the irrelevance of poets. And
I noticed your blog has been about politics purely lately.
Right, because I just feel like things are getting to be so bad and poets are not equal up to the task of addressing what's happening. And
Would you say Toscano is at risk of that failure?
Yes, I would say so. And, you know, I want to throw this in too because I think it's hard to be critical of each other because we it's such a small community. I mean, I know Rodrigo and I respect him, I admire him. You can't demand someone to be something other than who he is. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? People do what they need to do. You can't say, well, you got to be a different poet. I'm not trying to say that at all, but I'm doubting the whole worth of what we're doing in a sense, you know, in a very severe way, because I just feel like we're becoming increasingly irrelevant. Okay,
Randall, how do you follow that?
It's very hard. It does remind me of Ron Silliman's famous essay. Was it in Social Text, the one about disenfranchised groups being able to speak more directly, whereas those privileged white males have to be postmodern, to unfairly paraphrase the argument, which has been criticized many, many times from both sides of the spectrum.
So if this is doubting postmodernity from within, what position does that put Rodrigo in?
That's a good question. I think we'd have to ask him that. I'd say the thing that I would leave with on this poem is perhaps to evade the thrust of your question is simply a formal one, which is that this seems to me one of the few and relatively successful poems that take jazz as a formal device. And I think it's one of the things I think works best about this poem, given his allusion to the Thelonious Monk piece. This is a poem that works a lot more like a Thelonious Monk piece than most poems that invoke jazz do. They're all about jazz. They don't act like jazz. And this one acts a lot more like jazz than most jazz poems.
Emily.
It seems like very much he works off trigger words and trigger phrases in a lot of his like pieces, and that those are triggers not just as soundscapes but also as political scapes, and so they carry a lot in with them. And I think what's interesting about the poetic space is you're not necessarily obligated at every instant to disentangle them and be extremely clear and coherent in the same way that you might have to be, say, at a political rally, that you get a chance to occupy that space and let it be in pressure with itself. And so that in that case, one can have a political life that does not exactly coincide with one's poetic life, or the poetic life allows you to explore things that you have to be more cohesive about in another sphere. And I think he's an interesting example of like a collective and collaborative process. And I, at least in one space, had said some interesting stuff in terms of how small actually not only poetic communities are, but radical politics groups are,
smaller
and that
and
like
smaller.
They are, you are always working in these very local spaces for good and bad, but it is like some spot where at least to some degree relationships can be poured over, both linguistically and collectively.
Well, I can't resist a final word based on that wonderful comment, and in fact the disagreement we're having. The beginning of the poem is the clue for me. He is going to say what he's going to say, so he can do a faux poems taking over from me game there by mentioning the unmentionable. And so that this politically, ideologically fraught and hateful thing just happens to get in the poem unannounced. That's ha-ha irony. And he winds up saying basically that there is, I think he believes in such a thing as a radical poetics, and it's going to have to do more than provide radical content. It's going to have to test the formal limits and risk being called inaccessible and risk being unavailable. And one of the ways in which he reaches out beyond just, you know, lexical meaning of politics is by playing with the sound of these politically charged words and thus refreshing them, freshening them up. Well, we like to end Poem Talk with a minute or two of gathering paradise, a chance for several of us to spread wide our narrow hands to gather a little something really poetically good to hail, puff up, or commend someone or something going on in the poetry world. So who wants to gather a little paradise? Emily, you've got one?
I've just came back out. I've been in California for the last couple of months and was going to a number of events by the Non-Site Collective, which now has a New York branch as well. And it was a really nice mix of not simply a reading series, but really these conversational spaces. They did one with Banu Kapil Ryder and Mixing Too, just because it's Toscano, with Ultra Red, which is more of a sound project. They do these incredible sound recordings, but combining it with artistic practices out of a very much out of a political space. And so I guess I've been particularly excited about some of the work that Thought Collective has been doing.
Thank you. Good. Lynn?
I was in Allentown, Bethlehem, last week to do a reading, and just passing by Bethlehem Steel, what remains of that factory, you know, was kind of an awe-inspiring experience. I've been, you know, obsessed anyway about the industrial, ecological, and political collapse. So I would like to recommend The Rings of Saturn by W.G. Sabol as a book that is a wonderful meditation on these kind of collapses. It's a book about East Anglia, but it's very, I think, pertinent to our time. It's a wonderful book.
I think Bethlehem and East Anglia are very much alike.
Okay.
Well, that's all the Thatcherism we have time for on Poem Talk today. Poem Talk at the Writer's House is a collaboration of the Center for Programs in Contemporary Writing and the Kelly Writer's House of the University of Pennsylvania and the Poetry Foundation, poetryfoundation.org. Thanks to my guests, Randall Couch, Lynn Dinn, and Emily Abendroth, and to Poem Talk's director and engineer, James Lemaire, and our Rotterdam-based editor, Steve McLaughlin. This is Al Filreis, and I hope you'll join us again soon for another Poem Talk.